Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Insider, brought to you, as usual, by Vanishing Ink. My guest today founded Vanishing Ink. He wrote the best-selling magic book we've ever produced, The Boy Who Cried Magic. It's Andy Gladwin. Andy, how are you today?
Hello, Damien. Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, this is a very special episode of the show. We've not started the next season yet, but we thought we'd cheer up everybody's January because you would just on fool us. And let's do a special episode about it. Spoiler alert for anybody that's not seen it yet. This is your time. Go and see it. It's on the Vanishing Ink YouTube channel. Got some time. Watched it. Come back. Okay. Spoiler clearance zone finished. Andy, you won. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yes, I fooled Penn and Teller, which is just such a cool thing to say out loud.
It really is. It really is. But the look on your face is an absolute picture. It seems like you were genuinely surprised. Were you?
I was genuinely surprised, and there's a reason for that. Maybe we go into it later, or I can talk about it now. But yeah, I was genuinely surprised because I had been told that I hadn't fooled them, and then things unfolded in a very interesting way. So reaction that you see is the most genuine reaction I could ever give, because actually, while they were speaking, I was on the understanding that I hadn't fooled them.
Well, we'll go into the details of that story a little bit later. So it aired in America yesterday. How have the reactions been from magicians?
It's been incredible. My phone has been blowing up. I stayed up until 3 a.m. to watch it because I really wanted to watch it live. I think it's just much more fun that way. And just since that moment, my phone has been nonstop with positivity and warmth from the magic world and from friends and from, you know, non-magicians. Some key examples that really mean a lot to me. Somebody emailed the Vanishing Ink inbox to say that they cried when I fooled Penn and Teller, which was like, wow. The fact that somebody I don't even know is kind of blown away by that much and moved by the trick is just so kind. Somebody told me that their wife drew on the TV screen to truck out the maze and try and work out the method. And of course, because it's a puzzle trick with on a show that's kind of about trying to solve the method, loads of people have been emailing me and messaging me their ideas for the method, and nobody has managed to explain it just accurately yet, but that's been fun to see.
Oh, how lovely. So we had a customer who cried magic.
Good. That'll be the next book.
Yeah. You filmed this at the height of COVID. How did you even get into America?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I guess it was very tricky, and it was kind of stupid in some ways. There was an allowance for performers to be able to travel into America, because America was closed to Europeans and Brits, but there was an allowance that allowed people to get in, which I had actually got previously for another show, which made it tricky to get back for this one. So I had to go through Mexico. I spent 15 days in Mexico, and then could get access to America. So it's kind of a workaround, but a known one, and one that the US Embassy actually recommended. And I took George. George came with me from the Vanishing Ink team, and that was actually really great because we got to work all day. We kind of had a bit of a routine. We worked all day. We went swimming, and then we went back and we just rehearsed the trick and just kind of hammered out as much as we can, as many times as we can, because this is a trick that relies on some quick thinking. There's maths going on up here, and also some kind of quick thinking for humor as well. So having George there allowed me to just constantly react to him when he was playing Penn and or Teller. So it gave me an opportunity to just have a friend there, just to be drilling different lines and coming up with ideas and things that they might say and preempting things, which you can never preempt everything, but I think it's good to really try and cover all bases.
Yeah. And that must have been something that would be unlikely. You would have had that focused time were you at home, because you were stuck with George in the hotel. That gave you all that opportunity to have 2 weeks constant rehearsal, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a blessing in that respect. I mean, it was a complete pain in many other respects, including, you know, for the Foolless team, I had to be testing constantly, even when I was in America, and obviously when getting in, and we were doing daily tests when I was there. But they were so welcoming and so warm and so kind to allow me to do that. I was the only performer, I believe, that flew in from outside of the US for this season, but I felt it was important for this particular trick for me to be face-to-face with Penn and Teller instead of in some kind of, you know, digital world.
Sure. You haven't shared the method with me, but this would have worked virtually, right?
Oh, yeah, could've completely. It would work virtually. But I felt like this is a trick that is a trick about a connection between me and Penn and Teller, you know, their history and their reactions and the things they say. So I wanted to be there to actually be able to get that real-time interaction. I didn't want some kind of delay from, you know, doing a Zoom call or whatever. So while it would have worked, I feel like it was a sensible choice to actually be on that stage. And also, recording TV programs, not something I do all the time, but to me, it's all about the experience and the process. That's, yeah, you know, I take way greater pleasure from the actual recording stage and the process and being there than I do from watching it when it goes live. So to me, it's all about being there in the room, and I decided to just give myself the best opportunity and do that.
Yeah, sure. What was the production process like in these COVID-y times?
Well, we were dealing with a very professional, slick crew, so it was great. I felt completely safe, and I'm pretty sure everybody else around me did as well. You know, constant testing and social distancing, and they'd been through this before because this was the second season of filming in COVID, so they had everything down completely. And in fact, originally I was going to film in the first season of the first COVID season, but I just in the end I decided against it just because of it was all kind of new then, and international travel would have probably put them at risk, you know, a bit more because we didn't really know about travel as much then, and put me at risk, I guess. So it felt like the right thing to do to hold back a year, and I'm so glad I did, because I think the timing was just right.
Yeah, it gave you more time to think about it as well.
But the trick developed a lot over that time as well, actually, so it just shows that you shouldn't rush these things.
Honestly, just between us, might pretend there's nobody else listening. Okay. Did you really design it just for that one thing? And have you got any plans to do the trick again with like different people or whatever?
No, I take great pleasure from the fact that this is a trick and a presentation that is just a one-off thing. It was a moment in time. It was a moment of my life, and it's one that I intend to keep that way. So while people have said, well, you could do it with a bride and groom at a wedding, or you could do it at a corporate event where it's, you know, finding sales, finding customers and getting to the, I don't know, the end of some kind of sales pitch. But to me, that's not what this was about. This was about creating a moment for Penn and Teller. So truly, I cannot see myself ever doing this trick again. But I take a weird pleasure from that. Maybe I've been reading too much of The Jerks, but I take a lot from that sometimes an art piece doesn't have to be kind of continuously developed and continuously performed. It's just a one-off thing, and we have the video footage to enjoy, and that's enough for me.
It's a piece of ephemeral loveliness. Where are the props now, Andy?
Yeah, that's the cool part. After the show, I think you can see, when I watched it back, the one thing I noticed was how kind of touched that Penn and Teller were about the fact that this trick was about them. And amazingly, Teller wanted the props. He wanted to keep the props. So I let him have absolutely everything. And he said that he's going to get it framed and put in the green room, the monkey room backstage at the theater, which is kind of a really cool thing.
Is he sure he wasn't just trying to get a sneaky closer look to get to the method?
Yeah, maybe so. And actually, I don't think I told him this, but yeah, he has the method now. He there's something that he will be able to look at and decipher.
Oh. So, what was the process like for creating a trick like this? Obviously, you'd had a conversation with the production team and they'd said, we'd like you to come on and do something, or did you say, I've got this something, get me on?
Yeah, so the I'd done Foolish before. I did it with my balloon trick, where I get inside a balloon and do a trick from there. And it was clear to me when I did that, that was never going to fool them. In fact, I went to that show, you know, I got on the plane knowing I was not going to fool them, because I talked to the producers about the rules and what Penn and Teller would need to say to constitute, you know, what would constitute a fool was the question I asked them, which I think is a question that everybody, if they're going on it, should ask them, because, you know, we need to know the parameters. And I knew, of course, that Penn and Teller would be able to achieve what they required to say that they weren't fooled. But Fool Us is not just about fooling them. It's about the entertainment process. It's about showing up and doing a great job. So that's what I did with
getting
that trick.
Footage for your sizzle reel and social media and everything as well.
Exactly.
You know, there's value
for
in
the,
that.
For the, there's so much value in it, and for the experience as well. And just, you know, getting on that stage is just such a one-time life goal it was for me. But I always said, one day if I find the right trick, if I get the right thing out, I will go back on. But it wasn't ever forced. I wasn't thinking like, right, I got to find a trick to do to go on Fool Us. I just knew that I would only go back if I could give myself a fair shot at fooling them. And then, I mean, yeah, the history of this trick is quite fascinating, because no magic trick is created in isolation, right? There's a there's a long history of this trick going back many years, and it was thanks to some of my friends that this trick came about, but not particularly for Fool Us, but just for a show I was working on. We were looking at different ideas. And my friend Mark Elsden said, well, there's this great trick from Tenyo, bit of a spoiler alert coming up, by Sosato and his dad, that's a maze. And it's a very clever method. And I think we could turn this into a stage trick. And right. So we immediately started talking about, it's interesting, a maze as a stage trick. How do you stage that? And we had this idea that we would actually build a maze on the stage, literally a life-size maze for Penn and Teller. They would actually, for two spectators at that time. But a life-size maze. And when we started talking about Fool Us, of course, Penn would start on one side of the stage, Teller would start on the other, and then they would meet in the middle with this randomly generated maze. And it turned out, it's pretty clumsy staging-wise to be able to roll out all of those maze pieces. We did come up with a method, but it did require an offstage assistant who is essentially a stooge, but not a stooge. Like an assistant who's doing some of the method, and that's just foolish rules. So we knew that we had to kind of compromise somewhere along the lines. So I spent a long time... the Tenyo method... I have to be careful what I say, because I don't want to expose the Tenyo trick. That would be completely unfair to them and to Sosato. But the Tenyo method, you end dirty, I think it's fair to say. So the cards that you're taking out, the envelope, there's more, there's something to see in the envelope. And of course, you can't do something like that on stage, because the Tenyo trick is intended as a beginner's trick. So we knew that if we were going to do this, we had to find a way to make this really clean. And sure. I developed a method that there are no extra pieces left in the envelope. So it's still taking from Sosato's maths and Sosato's ideas and from the tricks that became before that. There's a trick called Light the Lamp, for example, from the 70s that is essentially the same maths. Actually, completely, I believe, the same maths. So we just kept working on it. And I joke that my friends and my team is essentially what I say, because my friends are my creative team, because I'm constantly calling on them for like, how should we do this? How can we stage this better? And it was thanks to Josh that we got to the method that we got to. It was thanks to Eli Bosnick and Harrison Greenbaum and Brent Braun that we got to the personalization aspect. And basically just, I called in all the help from my friends. The Vanishing Ink UK team, Mark, Ryan, George, were instrumental at making the gimmick, because there is a gimmick in the trick. So I was just very lucky to have great friends that I could call on for help to be able to take this idea of the maze trick and put it to where it is now.
Okay, so I think people listening will be interested if we can go a little bit more about the development. So you had the idea of the two people in a physical maze on the stage. Mm-hmm. How did you go from that to what you ended up performing?
Yeah, so we the first thing we thought was, we can't do it life size. That's not going to work. So we shrunk the props down, and I actually had Penn and Teller action figures made. Shall I get them? Can you feel for 1 second if I get them? Because I've never shown anyone these before. Say something cool, and I'll be back. Hang on.
Okay. So Andy's rushing through Vanishing Ink Towers now to find the action figures that he had. And that I didn't have to feel for very much at all, Andy.
I know.
He's Andy Blackwood with his action figures.
I heard, I got my AirPods on, so I heard you. Very good. So this was one of them. This is
audio listeners do need to go to YouTube now to see.
Oh, they would. Yes.
focus. So, look, that's, focus.
It's focusing. It's focusing. That's it's a pen I had made, a pen bobblehead, and the whole idea was that pen would start at one end and then he would go all the way across to the other end on the maze on a table. So there was a joke about Penn and Teller. So Penn, that's Penn, and then this is Teller. I blew all the budget on Penn, basically. But of course, because of TV World, I couldn't use like some random action figure. I had to have one made. And when they said like, "What do you want made?" I was like, "I don't know. Just do me as the Incredible Hulk." So that is me apparently as the Incredible Hulk. So there was a whole kind of there was quite a few gags kind of in some ways at the expense of Teller. Like, you know, everything I'd done, I'd put all the effort into Penn, and then I was like, "Oh, sorry, Teller." That's where we went to with it, first of all. Actually, using exactly the same method as I used on Foolus, but the trick was done on the table, and we were talking about could we film from overhead. But actually, right. When you film from overhead, it's not a good look, right? You can't really see
sure.
much.
Yeah.
So, you know, after I'd invested a lot of money in these action figures, we were then like, how do we now change that? And I just eventually realized, oh, we bring it up here. Just like every good trick, you know, every, like... parlor card trick, you take it from two-dimensional, you make it three-dimensional. And so that's what I did. I propped up the cards. And if you've ever seen my other work, especially my more recent work, I often am using projector screens behind me where I'm calling back to gags and stuff. And Josh had this great idea of, well, you should do that. You should be, each thing you say went to clown school, you should have like some kind of gag behind you on the screen. But it just never really gelled. I couldn't find the right jokes, the right moments, and it was pulling away attention. So then that's when I started to realize that what I actually need is a funny response to each of the things that Penn and Teller said. But interestingly, I didn't really need to use all that many funny responses because Penn was just so generous, so kind, that he was keeping this thing going just as much right. as I was. So he gave me something to bounce off, which was great, and it meant that I had to pull back on a lot of the prepared lines.
So in the 2 weeks in Mexico with Mysterious George, you were running through all of the possible things that you thought you might get given as a feed line, if you will.
Right, exactly that. So there was one of my favorite lines of the whole thing was when I'd say Penn went to clown school or clown college. Where would you like to put that? 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5? And I thought he was just going to say it really quickly, like 4, and put it down. But actually, he spent a long time thinking about it. But my gag was going to be, so he says 4 quickly, and then I would have said, wow, you said that really quickly. No messing around, which is ironic, given what you learn at clown school. So yeah, I had all of this kind of stuff prepared. But actually, what I didn't expect was that Penn would talk through his decision process, taking quite a long time, that actually it didn't really feel right to now jump in and make a joke about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there was just nothing that felt good. And I mean, that's what you have to do, right? You over prepare these things. And there were probably 50 or 60 things that were written in response to Penn and Teller that wouldn't ever going to be said, but they just needed to be there in case. So yeah, you can't rehearse something like that all that much other than just keep drilling it and just seeing what comes up and see what's funny. And I yeah, my aim was just to try and make George laugh during rehearsal, and then that kind of gave me a bank of things that I could do and say. And almost I think pretty much everything I said on that stage was because of me trying to make George laugh during a rehearsal.
And is that process something that you do with other material, that thinking about every, if you're at a top table at a wedding or whatever the gig is, that you're thinking of every possible scenario and having these branching anagram kind of things in your head for solutions to lines?
So I'm really lucky that I cut my teeth in the walk around in the wedding magic world, because as opposed to a trick for Penn and Teller that you do once, you do a trick maybe 20 times in a show. So I became, I feel quite good at responding to things that people say. And actually, I find that quite difficult when I do like a walk around show in America where people are just polite. There isn't much to kind of bounce off. But you go to the UK and it's a conversation way more than it is a show in a walk around setting. So I just became quite good at giving quick responses to things that people say. So often I'm not doing a kind of a branching thing like I would do for something as important as Flawless, but I am, yeah, I am just basically banking these often stupid things that I say during a trick that I have good responses so that I look prepared.
Sure, sure. We teased it at the top of the show, and I want to know the story that happened during the filming. Tell us the story, Andy.
Yes, this was a moment of Flawless history and something I will never forget. That so actually, what you saw on the night wasn't what we originally filmed. I did the trick. That's the trick is exactly the same. But Penn and Teller did this whole really nice monologue about Vanishing Ink, which was so kind. And then they said, we thought about the trick. And by the way, they thought about the trick for about 25 minutes, truly 25 minutes. I was just on stage having a conversation with Allison. How cool is that? Like 16-year-old me would have just gone absolutely crazy at that point. But they took a long time, and I kind of sensed at that point that if they're going to take a long time, they're going to have busted me, because they were really, you can see on some of the clips, they're drawing stuff out, and they, you know, at one point they asked me to step aside so that they could check the maze and stuff like that. So I realized they got me, and they did, and they gave an explanation, and they said, does that make sense to you? And kind of made sense, but of course they were speaking in code, and that was it. I didn't fool them. I walked away very happy with the performance, but it just, yeah, it wasn't to be. And I got back to my room, and after an hour or so, I mean, I got back to my room because this truly was a one-off performance. I put the cards, the maze pieces, I put them in the trash, not like in anger or anything. I just put them in the trash. I was like, well, I'm not going to need to take those home with me, so they went. And then I had a shower and, you know, got changed. Me and Josh was with me. We were about to go off to the strip and hang out. And I got a call from the producer, and he said, hey, we have a problem. We lost the footage. This has never happened before, but we lost the footage. You're going to have to come back and do it again. And I was like, I don't think I can go through this again. Like, this is a trick that requires... It needs to be new the first time you see it. I don't want to give, you know, I don't think I can give as good a performance second time. However,
the gags would have been recycled as well, and their response is... Oh.
Exactly. However, I'm also very respectful of the fact that the producer has a job to do, and they were so kind to me to allow me to be there. So I was like, of course, I'm coming right down. And I got the props out of the trash. Turns out that the stand had broken, not just because of carrying it back from the room. It snapped in half. And I was like, look, we got work to do, but I'm willing to do the work if you want to, if you need to. So... I went back to the theater. The props guys were straight on it. They repaired everything. It looked as good as new. We waited until there was supposed to be a break. And this is the part that amazes me, that the team, who must be, what, 120 strong team, I guess they skipped their break or delayed their break, which when you think about what that would cost a production team to do, like union rates, just unthinkable. Yeah. And I'm ready. I've psyched myself up. I go back on stage, everything is reset, and Allison's there, and Penn and Teller sat there, and I was like, hey guys, thank you, like, this has been such a great experience, and you, the fact that you worked it out, like, I'm super impressed, because I spent a long time working on this, I know the mess, I know the history of the trick, and you guys, yeah, I figured that maybe they must have known the Tenyo trick, the Soseto trick, and you know, they, while my method is different, the explanation that they gave would give enough room to go, hey, you know, that there are certainly mathematical similarities, very heavy mathematical similarities between the tricks. So I was like, fine, you got me, and I paid them the compliment. And then they started speaking, like doing the reveal phase again. I was like, hang on a minute. No, I'm supposed to perform this trick. So yeah. That's why when they come back to me, I'm looking so confused, because 10 seconds ago, we was just having a conversation about the fact that they worked out the trick. And then they were just so kind that they said, actually, it turns out on reflection, we worked what we thought we had worked out was incorrect. And when they were talking to the producers, they decided that I had fooled them. And The reason for that, I think everything changed because of one thing, which is when I first submitted the trick to the team, I sent a 12-page document of the history of the trick, all of the previous versions of the trick, how they work, how mine differs, and how the maths of the trick works, and how mine works, exactly the breakdown of how the trick works. And I think what happened, and I haven't fully got to the bottom of it, but Mike Close kind of gave me a hint that they read the document, that Penn and Teller got to see the document, and that they read it and were like, oh, that's not how we thought this trick works. Which I have to say, and I believe that's what happened, I don't know for sure, but I have to say, they didn't have to do that, right? What a kind gesture. That they, like, you know, I'd accepted. I hadn't fooled them. I'd gone home. I would have never have been ungracious and be like, but I think I really fooled them. Like, no, they busted me. They got it right as far as I was concerned. So they didn't have to do it. But just massive shout out and props to them. And, you know, every now and again you read, like, Foolus is a little bit rigged or whatever. But that to me shows that's not rigged. Like, that's apparently the first time that's ever happened, other than the Simon Coronel story, which I know he told on this podcast a while back, where they realized like a year later that they hadn't fooled, he had fooled them. But what a cool thing for Penn and Teller to do. What a class act that they would hold everybody back like that and change the verdict. And I will be forever grateful for that.
Absolutely. Now, you won't tell me I'm not asking about the method, but you said with yours you end clean, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the thing that you had the cards in that they don't ask to look in. Was that on the cutting room floor? Did they ask to look in it? Were you ready with a ha-ha?
Yeah, so that's interesting. It didn't make the edit as I kind of flashed it to put it down, because Mike Close had this great thought of like, well, when you put it down, why don't you at least let them see a little bit enough to make them question, is that empty? And then they're going to say in the reveal stage, I guarantee you they're going to say they want to see the envelope. Of course they do. And I think actually with all of this confusion and hubbub of like them working it out, maybe they just had already assumed that there was something in the envelope and didn't feel like they needed to say that. So right. I never got to show that it was completely empty, which is a shame actually, because I read the YouTube comments. Of course I do. I shouldn't, but I do. And everyone's like, I know you have many times. But people are like, and I know there's 16 extra cards in the envelope. No, there isn't. That's, that's not my version there. That's different. So, yeah, that's kind of a shame that they didn't make the cut, but hey, you know what? It's okay.
Absolutely, it's okay. Are you going to release it? Because I know this really good Vanishing Ink Magic Company thing that would probably put it out for you. Marketing guy's great.
He is great. He really is. But no, there's no need to release this trick in my mind. It was a trick created, you know, this presentation was so ingrained in the trick. I don't feel like at least I would ever do it justice performing with a different presentation. There's plenty of these kind of maze tricks throughout history. So if somebody really wants to perform a maze trick, then they should. I request that they don't perform my presentation, obviously. But no, I don't need to add to the marketplace in that way. I feel like that trick is done, and that trick is a moment that I'll never forget.
Oh, I imagine you won't. Mr. Andy Gladwin, what's next?
What is next? That's a great question. We teased in our annual letter that I'm working on some mainstream projects, and I hate being that guy that can't say what that means, but I'm spending my next year working on some stuff that is magic related, but not within the magic world. So yeah, lots to come. Watch this space. That's all I can say.
Last time you were on the show, we were doing origin story, and if people want your origin story, they can go back to, can you believe it, February 2019, when you were on to talk about the Edward G. Brown book.
Wow.
But Andy Gladwin, but we did not do the four quick fire questions, and we're going to now. Are you ready?
Yes.
Favorite pizza topping?
Blue cheese, especially if it's walnuts with it as well. Controversial. And middle class.
Darling, hold the quinoa. favorite movie?
I am going to go with Wolf of Wall Street.
Favorite person or people that make music?
I mean, you won't let me get away with saying so many. So I'm going to pick someone who I don't think you'd expect, but Bo Burnham, because I'm inspired with just comedy, comedy. Yeah, it's magic techniques that he's doing, but songwriting and like, yeah, that's. I'm going to go Bo Burnham, which is a weird choice, but one I respect. I respect Bo Burnham so much.
And he holds you in high esteem, I've heard. Who would you rather fight? Who would you rather fight? One massive George or 100 tiny Joshes?
It's always going to be 100 tiny Joshes, and not for the reason that you think. It's just because I know how strong George is. So just one regular sized George would be too much for me. So I'm going to go with 100 tiny Joshes, and I will squash every single one of them.
Andy Gladwin, thank you so much for giving us your time today. I do appreciate it. And congratulations again on fooling the bad boys of magic, Penn and Teller.
Thank you very much. Hey, I'm going to tell you one last thing that got cut, I think, which is the line, as I say, when you're in Broadway, you were known as the bad boys of magic, which is a name I think you'll agree also applies to me. I think that got cut, but still, I like to call myself the bad boy of magic right there. Thanks to the jerks for calling me that years ago. Goodbye.
Andy Gladwin, thank you. Goodbye.